If you're listening to this podcast, you already know healthcare delivery has changed significantly over our lifetimes, as well as those of our parents, grandparents, and all the previous generations that are part of our personal and collective history. Welcome to Steps to Value, the people, process, and technology podcast in which we hear the voices of those working to continue making changes to our care delivery system. And whether it's a physician, a CIO, a vendor, government agency, or a patient, we all play a role in moving forward. And at the root of much of this change is technology in all its forms. For this episode, I talked to Dr. David Rue, Chief Medical Officer and Head of Healthcare and Fitness at Samsung Electronics America, just one of many companies leveraging technology in ways that make our healthcare system and the experience of healthcare better. Over the course of this discussion, we address the role of mobile technologies and how they do more than just connect us. Mobile technology moves data, yes, but then it also becomes information and knowledge. How must our systems adapt to accommodate the fact that healthcare is no longer a passive experience for the patient, who now has the technology at hand to contribute data to this process? How do we keep patients engaged? And we'll even address how technology can adapt to the patient to help make that happen. I'm Rod Pihowski. Welcome to the podcast. We'll talk about all that and more in this episode of Steps to Value coming up. HIMSS corporate membership provides an avenue for healthcare vendors and consulting firms to collaborate and share knowledge with industry stakeholders and provider members. With four investment levels to choose from, offering benefits from marketing advantages at the HIMSS annual conference and exhibition to focus group and research opportunities, there's a membership that's right for your company. Learn more at hims.org/membership. Dr. David Rue is Samsung's Chief Medical Officer and Head of Healthcare and Fitness. Dr. Rue, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What knowledge from Samsung's insights into consumer electronics on that side has informed the discovery and design process for your emerging mobile health solutions?
Samsung has a fairly large footprint in the consumer technology space and a pretty good understanding of how consumers use technology, whether the technologies be mobile devices, wearables, TVs, or home appliances. And the principles are pretty straightforward. Create a user experience that's easy, secure, and digitally connected. And this leads to a delightful experience and a higher level of engagement. So in terms of digital health, Samsung's been applying these same type of principles to create higher levels of consumer and patient engagement with health-focused technologies that in many cases has been shown to improve outcomes. So a really good example is in the senior care space, where approximately 20% of seniors over the age of 85 readily adopt smartphones and tablets, which means that about 80% of seniors do not readily adopt this type of tech. And usually the barriers go well beyond making the icons bigger or dumbing down the experience, which is in fact contrary to what seniors want. Seniors want access to the same type of tools that everyone else wants. They just need the technology to be more adaptable. And what researchers have found that there's actually 43 barriers or configurations that need to occur to make this technology more easily adaptable. And we're talking about things that can help address the screen going dim or accidentally moving the icon off the side or the volume being too low or a user forgetting the username and password. And when you apply these 43 configurations to, let's say, a tablet, we've been able, through some interesting studies that have been deployed through the National Coalition on Aging and senior care facilities, show that we can lead to higher levels of engagement with seniors that have never used technology before. And interestingly enough, when programs that encourage people to stay more active and to communicate with others are applied on top of this platform, we've seen seniors in assisted living facilities be able to achieve some pretty high levels or improvements in their health outcomes, improvements in their physical activity, their ability and their confidence in terms of being digitally connected with others, and even in the cognitive ability. So really interesting examples of how we've been able to understand how technology, when configured to meet the needs of individuals, can be a great platform that allows us to be able to achieve better outcomes.
Can you give me an example of one thing that you noticed made a huge difference out of this whole category?
Well, I think the one thing is that, you know, we tend to take an approach where technology is one where the user has to adapt to it. But when we flip that around and recognize that we could adapt the technology to the individual, that created a higher level of engagement and understanding that we could provide greater levels of engagement. And so what we found, sort of following up on the example of the tablet, is that when we applied these 43 configurations, it was actually a software application called Breezy, to the senior population, we had a platform that allowed us to be able to do things that we had always wanted to do, which was present medication reminders, to be able to have the individual control their home through a tablet. And once we were able to do that, then that opened up a whole set of opportunities for us to understand how to integrate some of these existing solutions into the workflow of the consumer. And that's really the bottom line. Workflow compatibility for the consumer is all about their lifestyle and understanding how technology can fit into that. We need to understand that people use consumer technologies every day, and if we can use those as a starting point for how we deliver and capture information, it can lead to better adoption and ultimately better outcomes.
Yeah, and there truly is no one-size-fits-all, so that's an interesting approach. Now, you've mentioned the senior population a couple of times. Would you say that that's one of the most impacted populations by the whole connected health solution area?
Well, I think there's great potential, and we are seeing the senior care sector as being an area where, which is underrepresented from a tech standpoint, because many of the technologies today are geared towards younger, healthier people. And in cases where we are starting to see advancements in digital technologies, these could allow us to be able to address things such as disabilities for individuals. And these could be due to age, it could be due to injury, it could be to just simply disease itself. And when we understand how we can apply these technologies to individuals that have these issues, we can address issues around loneliness, we can address issues around social isolation, as well as chronic disease management and access to care and other things that are very important and generalizable. So huge opportunities, opportunities in the senior care sector, opportunities in the chronic disease management sector, and opportunities for us to be just generally more proactive.
And what I like about the mobile technologies is it's just such an easy way for the care setting to be expanded throughout without having to create new facilities or workflows or anything like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, we definitely feel that in order for us to be able to be better connected with our patients, our members, our family, we have to leverage things that people use every day. And the mobile phone has become almost a ubiquitous tool that everyone of all age demographics and social economic status are using, and it allows us to be able to, you know, have that platform which can enable better communications and coordination.
Well, let's talk about care coordination. That's really a challenging area of operation, especially between hospitals and outpatient settings. What challenges lie ahead as these technologies move more care into the home and post-acute settings?
Well, when we think about how difficult it is to provide care coordination between healthcare providers in a closed hospital setting, now imagine a scenario where we need to expand this level of care coordination and now coordinate care and services with individuals outside of the healthcare setting. These may be family caregivers, social service providers, non-medical transportation and food services, and even the patient. Mobile platform creates a tremendous opportunity to coordinate all these communications and tasks. But at the same time, all of this needs to be centrally managed. It has to be easy to understand and it has to be workflow compatible. And this is where there's still some work that needs to be done, because there's so many great tools that we have on the consumer side that we may be able to leverage to be able to enable this communication and coordination to occur. But it's going to be something that organizations that are highly innovative, that are thinking outside the box, that are leveraging the consumer platforms, will be able to start testing and validating, and ultimately we'll see wider spread adoption.
So while you were just stating that, I was wondering, do patients even know that care coordination is a thing and that they're part of it and that this is a goal?
Probably not. And, you know, I think that's where one of the opportunities for us as a healthcare industry lies, where we have to find ways to better communicate some of those challenges that we have. Much of what we see in healthcare is done in sort of like behind the scenes. You know, a lot of the communications are done between healthcare providers and folks that are helping to coordinate these services. But if we could find ways that we could engage not only the patient, but their family, their friends, maybe even their existing mechanisms of how they work and communicate, we may be able to create new opportunities. We're starting to see, you know, interesting partnerships and relationships occur on abilities to deliver food, to be able to transport patients, to be able to understand how patients and their family members can be better supported in the process of receiving and delivering care. So a really exciting opportunity for us today.
We've been talking about all these different solutions, and one of the big issues nowadays is, of course, privacy and security. It's always been, but I think it's one of those things that has really come to the forefront over the past year or two. So with all of these solutions bringing care to the patient wherever they are, and whether they're at home or on the go, how do you ensure that all of this health and location-focused data that's getting produced stays protected?
Yeah, it's a great question. Today, about 84% of cyber attacks are occurring at the application level, and mobile and IoT devices are potentially key portals of entry for malware, spyware, and data hacking. At Samsung, we've been focusing on this issue for the past decade, and in the process, we developed a mobile security platform that today is considered by Gartner as the most secure enterprise mobile platform in the industry for the past 2 years. And that platform is called Knox, K-N-O-X. It's sort of like Fort Knox. It's a hardware-software integrated platform that protects the data from the moment that you boot the system on your mobile device by encrypting the data at the trust zone layer all the way up through to the day-to-day use on the applications. And the Samsung mobile devices are fortified by Knox. It's currently being used and deployed by the government and financial sectors. We think that security, and in particular cybersecurity, is going to be the next big frontier for healthcare, especially as we start looking out, going outside of the closed quarters of a hospital to areas where individuals, and these could be healthcare providers, these could be patients, could be family members, are now starting to provide that level of communication and coordination using these mobile platforms. So we have less control over the scenario, and in which case we're going to need to make sure that the platforms that we use are both secure but also easy and accessible by a large number of people.
And security should largely be invisible, correct?
Absolutely. Oh, no question. That's been one of the biggest challenges, where you can lock things down and make it highly secure, but if you make it so difficult for people to do this, then it ends up sort of in a self-defeating purpose. So you need a certain level of usability and adoption to make sure that the security is well balanced.
Two more questions for you that I can think of right now. Thinking socially, how do we ensure that what's now considered to be a digital divide doesn't evolve into a digital health divide?
Today, the approach is a bit problematic in the sense that it oftentimes involves patients and consumers collecting large amounts of data from their wearable devices and other types of peripherals, sending those data to the healthcare provider and expecting and hoping that the provider is going to figure out what to do with all those data. Now, that approach and that model works for a small segment of patients and providers, but most find that the model doesn't work because, generally speaking, people want actionable data. They want to be informed when certain things are heading in the wrong direction, if an individual needs an urgent callback, and how and the best way for them to intervene. So we are talking not just about analytics, machine learning. We're talking about creating a different model in which the healthcare provider is actually a key part of the overall solution where the provider, in the context of describing some of the things that he or she needs to better manage the patient, creates solutions that capture those elements and allows for this information to be processed. Rather than it being just oceans of data flowing in, it's specific things that they're looking for at specific times that are then brought in collaboration with other data elements. And we don't see that too often, where the healthcare provider and the patient experience are both key considerations. It's oftentimes one or the other. When we see that we've got data and workflow that's compatible for both, then we have an opportunity to create solutions that will be well adopted and will lead to better health outcomes.
Do you think we have data that has yet to reveal things that we don't know yet? Is this still evolutionary? We've got all this data. We know the obvious answers. Is there something hidden that we have yet to discover once we start collecting all this data? And is that your expectation?
Yeah, I think you need to kind of categorize things into two general groups. One is the research realm, where we do absolutely want to look at every single data point and look and draw correlations and figure out what those correlations will be. And that will further need to be validated, and we'll need to create predictive models around those. But then on the flip side, you've got the practical clinical use case for clinicians that are taking care of patients that need the more rudimentary, tell me what I need and what I need to do. And as long as we have both running in parallel and feeding into each other, I think we're going to be able to have a good system. It's not one or the other, it's both.
All right, well, I have one more question for you, and this we ask all of our guests. What is your favorite technological invention, and what do you think its impact has been on our culture? And it doesn't have to be in healthcare. What's your favorite technology?
Well, I think digital health has the potential to completely disrupt the way that we think about how consumer-based technologies can be used to treat medical conditions. So a really good example is virtual reality. When I first was exposed to virtual reality, I had this impression that we could use this as a means to train physicians and other healthcare providers. We could entertain folks, and so patients would have a better experience. It maybe distract kids from certain procedures that are painful. What I hadn't recognized is that there's actually a therapeutic element to VR that has been well studied in science and in research settings, but has never been really deployed broadly. And we're seeing this in clinical trials where VR is being used to address and treat pain, stress, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, visual disorders, even spinal cord injury and stroke. We recently completed a randomized controlled trial at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles in coordination with a company called Applied VR, where the results were astounding. In this randomized controlled trial, the intervention group, which received VR for typically around 10 to 15 minutes, versus a control group that watched the same type of content on a TV screen, had in the intervention group a 53% lower pain score. In other words, more than four times the level of reduction in that group versus the, we'll call the control group. And it's astounding because we're starting to recognize that even if you apply the most rigorous science to these technologies, we're finding that these tools can be just as good, if not better, than some of the existing things that we have today, which in the case of pain is narcotics. So we're starting to see patients now reduce their narcotic use, post-operative patients that normally required pain meds postoperatively are now using VR as an adjunct or an alternative. Sick kids with sickle cell pain crisis come into the ER, normally requiring IV narcotics and hydration and hospitalization, being sent home directly. Women delivering babies with VR and no epidural. So real astounding things. And potentially it has the impact to be a critical piece as we start addressing issues like the opioid epidemic.
Absolutely. Your point about women delivering babies, I think that would make a really interesting discussion to see people who've gone through that and whether or not they believe that a VR experience would help with the pain.
Yeah, we actually do. We just completed, there's a woman that just was filmed did the whole delivery with just VR, no epidural. And there's one previously as well. So this has actually been documented a few times, and you'll hear more about this in the coming month or so.
Well, we're looking forward to that. Well, Dr. David Ru is Samsung's Chief Medical Officer and Head of Healthcare and Fitness. Dr. Ru, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Denver. I focus on building collaborative relationships for HIMSS with other organizations to align opportunities to work together to offer resources, education, and to support our shared goals. You're listening to Steps to Value.
How's your organization connecting patients with care where they are? Is mobile involved? What did you think of this interview? Send us your thoughts as a voice memo or an email, and we'll play it or read it on the air at the end of our next episode. You can send your comments to value@hims.org. We'd like to thank our guest, Dr. David Ru, for his insights on how Samsung is working to support health at home. For more information on everything discussed by our guest today, please visit this episode's landing page in the HIMSS Health IT Value Suite. Steps to Value is a copyrighted production of HIMSS North America. The series is co-produced by Adam Baser. Kelly Lippitt is story editor and guest relations manager. I'm Rod Pihowski. See you next time on Steps to Value.